Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of the Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. For other promotional offers, please visit theorganicview.com's website. On today's show, Mr. Drew Becker, who's the president of the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, is going to talk about the upcoming Philadelphia Flower Show. It is the event of events, and he's going to explain just why. But first, I'd like to welcome to the show my special guest co-host, award-winning rosarian, Susan Fox. Good afternoon, Susan, and thank you for joining me.
Good afternoon, June. It's so great to be here. And good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for joining us when you're so busy with the show right now.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yes, Drew, good afternoon and welcome to the show. Drew, before we begin, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you first became interested in horticulture?
Yeah, it's a really fun story. I became interested in horticulture from a very young age. Actually, I get back to my grandmother, and she allowed my brother and I to play Tonka trucks in her garden. And, you know, we learned by those aha moments of squishing tomatoes and those types of things. And I just was like, wow, you know, this is sort of cool. And then her house always looked better than all the other houses because it had a great garden around it. And it just was one of those things that stuck in my mind. And I was like, you know, I want this to always be a part of my life. So that's really, in a nutshell, the way that worked. And I went to school for planning, and I really focused on focusing on plants and what they did in the built environment and the way that they made places look and feel. And then it went on from there, went on to work for Mayor Daley in Chicago, Bloomberg and Bette Midler in New York, D.C., and now in Pennsylvania.
And actually, you've been very involved with the planting of trees. Can you tell us a little bit about the Plant 1 Million campaign?
Yeah, I really got involved with planting trees at a very young age. And actually at my elementary school and then at my high school, I thought my high school was really, really ugly, and started a garden club. I'm sure you can tell it's probably pretty popular in high school starting a garden club at that age, but it was a lot of fun. And we planted a lot of trees. And again, it was one of those like, wow moments that, you know, planting those trees just immediately made, you know, everything look better and feel better. So we started planting trees in Chicago and Cincinnati when I was in school there and when I was in college, and then launched a Million Trees NYC, a Million Tree program in New York a couple of years ago. And then basically modeled that same program here in Pennsylvania, but it's a little bit different because we're working with 3 states and 13 counties, and it's the largest multi-state, multi-county tree planting effort in the country. And so far, we've planted over 500,000 trees as part of the program toward the million mark by 2020. So and we've trained over 5,000 tree tenders as well to help maintain all of those trees that are being planted. So it's just, I think throughout my career, I've counted up, planted and been involved with planting close to 3 million trees throughout these cities. So it's a love of mine, and it's something I think everyone should do because it's a humbling experience when you go back and see them.
Oh, I completely agree. And it's
especially after Hurricane Sandy, there's been a very big effort in New York City as well as on Long Island to explain to residents that are afraid of trees. There's actually a term called dendrophobia. I did an interview a while back with a gentleman from Cornell Cooperative Extension who has spoken quite extensively about this very subject. So many people are afraid that if they have trees on their property, that the tree is going to cause all sorts of damage. But meanwhile, just one tree can save so much money as far as energy. It can add to the property's value, and it also helps the local environment as far as habitat.
Yep. Yeah, you're totally right. You know, in almost every single city that I've worked in, we always have to overcome these tree phobias. Or what did you call it? I said it's a cool name.
Dendrophobia.
It's better than my tree phobia name. Okay.
If you think you're a nerd, I'm probably, you know, exactly. Blonde nerd here. But, it's actually quite fascinating when we started looking at behavior post-Hurricane Sandy and all over. It wasn't just the Northeast, but even in other parts of the country, wherever there was a tremendous storm, people just cut trees down because they didn't want to deal with having a tree fall in their house and whatnot, which is perfectly understandable. But not every tree is going to succumb to the elements in that fashion.
Right.
So what you're doing...
Yeah, and I was just going to say, and I also think a lot of people, you know, also remember, because there was a time when we weren't as sophisticated on what species of trees should be planted in what location, and, you know, the high rooters or the low rooters, and, you know, and what it does to people's sidewalks and things like that, and we've become much more, you know, much more sophisticated in what trees go in what environment and where, and a lot of those issues just, you know, we don't have anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Drew, could you share with our listeners how people can get more involved with the campaign?
Yeah, so we have a great website, and you can get through phsonline.org, or just Google or whatever your browser is, Plant 1 Million, and you can look how to get involved. I think one of the biggest things that we need to do is to get people to tend trees, and that is, you know, after they're planted in their neighborhoods or plant them in their neighborhoods, is to help maintain them for at least that critical 2 to 3 years until they get established. And we have a wonderful tree tending program. You can go through most Philadelphia neighborhoods have an active tree tender program, and we can get people involved in that way. That's one of the best. Or you can always we always look for, you know, we love people to gift trees and donate trees as well, because that's always always a big part of it as well.
And it's also a fantastic idea, or rather activity, for families, because you can make that tree almost a memorial, if you will. Susan and I did a show recently that talked about using roses as memorials, but you could do the same thing with a tree, because, you know, as that tree grows, it's interesting when you see how much it's grown over the years. You can think back about the purpose of planting that tree, so on and so forth, and it's a great way to memorialize a particular individual or individuals, even beloved animal companions. I
see
people
totally
doing
true.
All sorts
and it's
of
like,
things.
You know, when I go back, I grew up in Ohio, as I said, and I grew up in this place called Centerville, and where we planted trees in Centerville High School. It's one of my, I don't go back there much, but when I go back, always one of my drive-bys, and then go back and look, is Centerville High School, and looking at those trees, you know, that were planted, and just, you know, getting mesmerized by how big they are, and, you know, it's just, and it brings back, you know, all those positive and good memories. So
you must be a proud papa.
I am, Doug. I can call me that to a lot of them. So
now, Drew, I am very excited to, well, Susan and I are both very excited to talk to you today about the Philadelphia Flower Show. And I've heard so many things about the show. I'm so happy that this year I will be attending. Can you share with our listeners about the history of the show? And we'll get into a little bit later some of the events. But what makes this the event, the star of the season?
Well, it is the Philadelphia Flower Show is America's oldest, largest flower show. It's actually one of the largest flower garden horticultural events in the world. And even if you just take that horticultural and floral events off, it's one of the largest events that happens in the world. And it's right here, what I like to call the Horticultural Hambasque of the United States in Philadelphia. And it got its start in 1829. The Pennsylvania Horticulture Society was started in 1827, so 2 years after we started the flower show, and it's been in continuous existence since 1829. So that first show, it's just the history of it. I mean, we have novels on the Philadelphia Flower Show. And when you're here, I'm going to make sure you get the Philadelphia Flower Show book. It's really unbelievable of what's all happened here. So in 1829, the poinsettia was first seen by the general public at the Philadelphia Flower Show. And people were wow, they'd never seen a plant like that before. And it's popular today and owes a lot of its popularity, like them or love them, to the Philadelphia Flower Show. And the chrysanthemum was actually introduced to the general public here, the chrysanthemum, the bird of paradise. And we a lot of the major plants that are really popular today were first introduced to the general public in the mid to late 1800s at the Philadelphia Flower Show. And we have this one section, it's called the PHS Hamilton Horticourt. And it is where people from all over the country bring the plants to get judged. So you see some of the best specimen plants ever. And it's really great to see kids from like 9 years old to people that are 90 years old, getting and trimming and passing their plants and having them judged and getting blue ribbons. We have over 7,000 entries in the horticourt that people bring their plants to get judged. So it's really an unbelievable sight to see. And it's quite special, actually. So those are two big things that happen here. But then people just like to be wowed by what you can do with plants. And, you know, it's the show part of it that people really just go, just Google over is, you walk in, and it is completely spring, completely summer. You get that smell, and you are just, overwhelmed by beauty. It's just gorgeous.
Drew, I was wondering, in keeping with your movie theme, I saw that your entry garden is a star-studded rose garden with blooms named in honor of silver screen legends like Judy Garland and Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I thought that was just such an exquisite idea to do that with the names of rose legends and movie stars. Can you fill us in a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what we've done is every year is, if you haven't been to the show, one of the big stars is our central feature or our big entrance garden that we create. This sort of sets the tone for the whole show, and we, try to wow people. When you walk in, it's that first thing that you see. And this year, we are harking back to the 1920s, 1930s. Big movie palace era. So when you walk in, you're gonna get this big marquee and this that's all made out of flowers. It's just unbelievable. And with that, around and through the central feature will be these amazing sweeps of all of these roses that we have made. So it's amazing how many. First of all, you probably much more than me know how many cultivars and how many types of roses there are. But there are all these roses named for these movie stars. And we have seriously, some of them are easy to find, and some of them are not. And we'll have a lot of them here, and people will be able to see them for the first time. You named a couple. We have Elizabeth Taylor, we have Henry Fonda, Barbara Streisand, Bette Midler. All of these roses named after these movie stars, and they're really quite gorgeous. Like the Judy Garland one is orange and yellow. Marilyn Monroe is peach. Elizabeth Taylor, she's pink. I don't know if I would put Elizabeth Taylor in pink, but I guess so. That's what it is. Henry Fonda is yellow, and Barbara Streisand is pink and lavender. So And then Bette Midler has a pink and white rose, among others. So it's going to be I think it's going to be the first time a lot of people have seen these types of roses like this all in one place. But
no, I grew Elizabeth Taylor in Texas. It was a deep fuchsia, just a beautiful rose, just a magnificent rose. Yes, and I just a wonderful center and a gorgeous rose. And you know, I was reading in Philadelphia Home Magazine, inside Drew Becker's Chestnut Hill home, it says that you are a nursery shopaholic. And
I am.
Being a nursery shopaholic, which really, it's my favorite thing that I look forward to in the spring too. I can't wait to run to all of the different garden centers. But what are some of the really interesting plants that we should look for at the show, and things that you just love that are for sale this year and at your show?
Well, we've got on top of all of the great stuff, we have the PHS puts out this great hot list. And it's a hot list of plants and great things that are happening. And one of the things that I just find really fascinating that is happening this year is everybody loves these, you know, I don't know, people call them different things, fairy garden, miniature gardens, you know, those types of things. But all
Susan
of this
and
stuff
I do a show. I'm sorry. Susan and I did a show about that just recently.
It's unbelievable. Like, it's just like, you know, everybody wants these things. And
it's so
just
popular.
The dwarf plants and everything like that. We're going to have all of that. We have a whole bunch of vendors selling that stuff. And we'll have even our big exhibit, which is our miniatures, which is a huge attraction here, that there's a miniature society. And that you will see some of the best miniature gardens in the world. It actually, we traveled them to Singapore, to the Singapore Flower and Garden Show this year. So you'll get those ideas there. And then, of course, you know, edibles. And people are just, vegetable gardening. We just did a survey of our members and things like that. And over the years, vegetable gardening and that type and food gardening have been really trailing in what our members wanted to learn about. But now they're almost equal. So we are really focusing on really innovative, cool ways to do vegetable gardening, specifically in small places, container gardening, that type of stuff. And container gardening does not just have to be, you know, your geraniums and whatever. It's like you can grow quite a bit of herbs and fruits and vegetables in containers. So we're going to have people show how to do that. So those are some of the really cool things that that we'll have, and all of that stuff will obviously be on sale here as well for the show for you to take home.
Isn't it true that the proceeds from the show actually go into the society to further continue education on gardening and more educational information?
Yes, it is. This is our biggest fundraiser that we put on. It raises millions of dollars every year that goes to support a lot of the programs we talk about, from our Garden Tenders program to our Ask a Gardener program. It supports our library initiative. It supports our City Harvest initiative. The tree initiative, all of that is supported through the money we raise here at the flower show. And also we have got 70,000 members across the country, which makes us, it's really the single largest horticultural society in this country. And we love our members, and they support us and make all of these great things possible.
Well, I read it's the oldest. It's the oldest and the first too, isn't it, Drew?
We were founded in 1827, which makes it the oldest, largest, and first horticulture society in the country. So yeah, if you read back, you have a lot of our friends across the pond were some of the first members. So.
I was going to say to Drew, don't you think with the miniature gardens, as people downsize, I'm so glad to see miniature gardens and miniature roses, and because people that go into if they have to go into a smaller space or into condos, they can do patio gardens, so it also vertical gardens, there's just so many options for them to continue gardening. They don't have to, even if they give up their garden in their yard, that doesn't mean they have to give up gardening. So I'm so glad to see that. And then this, the options available for container gardenings are so varied, don't you think so?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, and the container gardening stuff has just, you know, come miles over the last couple of mm-hmm. years on, you know, how and what you can grow in, and then, you know, the soil mixtures and things like that. So it's amazing what you can do in a small space. And, you know, that's something that we're going to really, really talk about at our Gardener Studio, which is our lecture series and stuff like that.
And I saw you mentioned your floral competitions, but you've got so many different types. And have you, I saw that you're the 36th president of the Philadelphia Horticulture Society, but do you compete? Do you have a particular flower that you like to compete in? Is there one that you like to talk about, or can you mention any flower show that's your favorite?
Any
that you like to compete,
well,
or what the competitions of the show that are really?
I don't compete in the show. I would get.
You wouldn't be able to have time. It's so intense.
Well, that would be people would be like, if I won, it would be fixed or whatever. But I do. But I, you know, as you stated, I do have a garden at my home, and my favorite plants just happen. I love white flowers. It's one of mm-hmm. my favorites. So my garden's a lot of white and green, and it's that's sort of my style. And that's, you know, anything that's white, that has white flowers on it, I'm gonna love.
Succulent garden? Oh, you had a beautiful succulent garden. They showed it's gorgeous. It's just beautiful.
Yes. Yes, I
and
love,
they
I
showed
love
that
supplements
in Philadelphia
well.
Home. And yeah. I did read that you have to, due to your work, and it said that Bette Midler summoned you to do the New York Restoration Project, and it that I thought that sounded really quite interesting. And since your work requires you to travel so much, is it difficult for you to give up some of the gardens that you have put together in some of your homes? And maybe you could tell us about a little bit about the New York Restoration Project.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when I design gardens and I build gardens at my home and then move on, or we do other gardens, you know, hopefully we design them that and bring people in that you know they will live on. And that's the whole thing about a garden, is they can, you know, hopefully the structure and everything will stay the same, but, you know, according to people's tastes, you know, other things can change out and be added, you know, over time, and they'll enjoy it just as much as, you know, as we did. And when in New York, when we started doing a lot of with Bette Midler's New York Restoration Project, we really focused on community gardens and great design. And so many times, you know, the sustainability, community gardens, and great design all don't seem to mix together. And we wanted it, you know, really to mix that together. So we brought in great garden designers and things like that worked with the community to make these gardens really, really special. You know, little central parks for these communities, and they've really stood the test of time. They still are, you know, some of the most important little pieces of property in a lot of the neighborhoods in New York. And it's just great. I took a tour. We took about 40 of our community gardeners from Philadelphia up to New York to have a tour of the New York Restoration Project gardens this last summer. And it was just great, you know, to see those people involved, new people involved, see how the gardens have evolved over time. And it was gorgeous. It was a great tour. And it's something that, again, it's like planting a tree. It's something, you know, it's fun to go back and see those gardens that you had a hand at creating and see, you know, what they've grown into.
Exactly. And from what I understand, what's important to gardeners, especially in this area, there's a lot of attention, well, not just in this area, but nationally is pollinators, especially the butterfly population. The monarch butterfly population has been in tremendous decline, over 90%, according to a study conducted by the Center for Food Safety that was released not too long ago. Now, from what I understand, Drew, you have a very special event at the Philadelphia Flower Show about butterflies. Could you just take a minute to talk about that?
Yeah, it's called the Butterfly Experience. It was actually we worked last year with our partner to bring that experience to the show, and it was hugely popular. And this year we've doubled the size of it, and we're bringing in a whole exhibit about the importance of, you know, pollinators and butterflies to the whole. Actually, at the flower show, they're going to be going into room, and there's going to be over 2,500 butterflies that will be there, and they'll really experience, you know, firsthand the magic of what they do, and learn, you know, the importance of these little critters to the world. And it's really it's one of those experiences, especially with kids. You know, they might be afraid of bugs or whatever, and it really sort of, you know, levels the playing ground. They're flying around, and it becomes a learning experience that's fun. So, and it was hugely popular last year with our audience, and I think it's going to be even more popular this year. Well, ticket sales are telling us it's going to be even more popular this year. So
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, especially since there have not been too many butterfly reports, from at least from the local area. I know in Nassau County there were less than 20 monarchs recorded for the entire growing season last year. I don't know.
Really?
About Suffolk County. Yeah, and this is on organic land. It doesn't matter the amount of chemicals that are being used in the home environment are tremendous. So a program that will encourage the education and the importance of these pollinators is tremendous. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but the show might be one of the only places, if things don't change, where kids can see butterflies, at least, you know, in the vast number of species that you have. So I think that's a great opportunity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Drew, can you imagine a garden without butterflies? That would be
no.
I certainly can because I experienced it last year, and every day I would check with the chair people of the committee. I'm a member of the Dahlia Society, so it's kind of across the property, and when we saw a couple of different butterflies, but when it came to the monarchs, as I said, very, very few. So it's very important to get as much information out there and raise as much awareness as possible, you know. But, Drew, I just want to say thank you for coming on the show today. Could you share with our listeners the information for buying the tickets? And also, do you know what the dates are for next year?
Yeah, the tickets are the tickets. The best way to get tickets is theflowershow.com, and that is the best way to purchase tickets. It's also one of the cheapest ways right now to do that. Pre-show, you'll save some money purchasing them, and then next year the show opens March 5th.
Fantastic!
And runs for a week.
Well, there are a lot of people that come to the show from all over the world. So especially if you are planning your destination during the spring and you're looking for some really, really cool things to do, this is definitely a place that appeals to a lot of people, not just the geeky folks like us. But Drew, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and I sincerely hope you come back at some point in the future.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we look forward to hosting you here in Philadelphia at the largest flower show in the country.
Thank you, Drew. So nice talking with you. It's Susan.
pleasure.
And folks, please check out the Philadelphia Flower Show's website, and by all means, bring the family, bring a friend, whatever you do, make sure that you get there. It kicks off this weekend. And Drew, when is the show over?
It closes on March the 8th.
Thank you. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.